Hello and welcome to the Brad Pitt Cast, the podcast about Brad Pitt. I am Dan.
I'm from now, Joseph.
It's a time of transition.
Is this really boring for me to bring up?
I don't think it needs to be pointed out.
I used to always be Joe in my personal life and Joseph in my professional life, and today I've had many encounters where they were like, what name is it under? And I've said Joe, and it's turned out to be Joseph, and the other way around.
I think you have to commit to one.
I'm 100% on Joseph now.
Okay, I can respect that. I made a decision when I moved to Sydney to become exclusively Dan. I was a range of things before.
I can't really imagine you as a Daniel.
I appreciate that.
We're here not to talk about our names, but about the 1991 film Thelma and Louise.
Yeah.
Starring Bradley J. Pitts.
It includes Bradley Pitts.
Yeah. This is the one. This is the film that changes the narrative from these extremely bizarre, like, basically unreleasable films that we've been covering to global superstardom. It's a real star-making turn in terms of his career.
You also see him become an actor all of a sudden. He'll become a star, even.
Yeah. He's extremely charismatic. He's extremely magnetic. What do you think? I should note, we're joined by a real-life guest, the first ever one.
We made a cameo last week.
Yeah, she stuck her head under the fort that we had last week. Now she's sitting on the couch. There's no fort.
Hello.
And her name's Brianna Elton, and she's my partner.
How's it going?
And she's here to talk about Thelma and
Louise. She watched it with us.
She watched
some of it.
Maybe 25 minutes. Do you think that's generous?
Yeah, about 15.
Because
some total.
Yeah, in and out.
Yeah.
Because you're not really, I mean, this is why, there were a number of reasons why it was weird to force you to do this podcast. One of the weirdest is that you don't really like movies.
No.
Do you think that's fair?
Yeah.
You hate all movies?
I just don't really have the attention span for them.
Do you think it's attention span?
I feel like I should know that I have a sinus infection. And I'm here tonight to fill out the gender quota.
We're talking about Thelma Louise. We could not be two dudes.
We can't be just Joe and Dan.
Joseph.
Sorry, oh my god, I fucked up already.
So what are the films that you like? What is the difference?
Get a sense.
Don't do this to me, Joe.
We're you like Moonlight. You really like the film Moonlight.
I did. Yeah, Moonlight was great.
But why do you like that film versus any other film?
You do this to me in real life and I don't have an answer for you. I'm not going to have an answer for you now on the podcast.
You like things that are very pretty. You don't like tension or violence at all.
Tension, violence, fighting, nothing.
I get that.
Thanks.
Why do we want to inflict it on ourselves?
I think that's Brianna's attitude, isn't it?
Makes sense.
No. You can have enough of it in real life. Movies can just be a place where that doesn't exist.
There's tension in Moonlight.
There's no narrative.
There's tension in Moonlight.
Yeah, but it's poetic tension. I don't know what it is.
It's dreamy, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. It also feels like it takes the tension seriously, whereas like the gore slasher horror films that you watch from like the 80s, set in high schools,
the hundreds and hundreds of them,
hundreds of them, don't take the tension seriously.
What do you mean not? They make it fun, though. Is that a problem?
We're talking about Thelma and Louise.
Yeah, I agree. Joe is now trying to defend his.
Yeah.
Well, because so I guess we might as well get it out of the way. Dan hates it when I say something like this because he knows.
Caveats. Prefacing.
I really don't like this film.
Yeah, well, we knew that last week when you watched it when you were 14, was it?
I was like 12 when I first watched this film, and I didn't like it, and I was hoping that I would like it more.
No, you never for a minute thought you would like it more.
I didn't
think from the beginning you knew you would hate it.
I wanted to like it.
Okay,
There were snatches where I was like, this is big and silly enough. When they blow up the tanker at the climax of the film, it's crazy enough that I'm having a good time. And the score is crazy, and there's enough silliness. But I want to know why Brianna Elton didn't like it. Part of me thought that maybe you would like it. Because it's funny. There's not a huge amount of tension.
It tries to make jokes.
It does, yeah.
Whether that's funny.
And it's a
bit
nice.
When the car goes off the cliff. Ooh.
No, you can spoil it. Yeah, okay. Spoil away. This is, look, if, yeah. We're spoiling Thelma and Louise, guys.
Yeah, well, the bit when they die at the end, that's kind of funny. But
it is genuinely
funny.
It is kind of funny. I mean, that's a bit
freeze frames.
It's just car in the air. That's perfect.
It also goes widescreen, weirdly.
Yeah.
So that's funny. Nothing else made you laugh?
No. No. But it was good. Maybe it's because I've just seen it meme so many times. You know?
It's true. Yeah. There is that weird thing when you've seen something memed and then you see it in the film and it seems strange. It's like when you watch Citizen Kane.
Oh, you've seen that million. Yeah, Simpsons have done it for everyone. Exactly.
This, watching Thelma and Louise really made me think, like, I wish I was watching The Simpsons spit take of that.
Well, yeah.
I tried extremely to like this hard.
Film. People I respect like this film. Who? I felt like we don't need to name names.
We can. Let's list them.
Well, look,
fuckers.
I'll say. I mentioned to a couple friends. I mentioned to my friend Lucas that I was going to watch it. He said he loves Thelma and Louise.
Shout out to Lucas.
Shout out to Lucas. One of the best guys. Yeah. Genuinely, he likes this. My mum found out I would be watching Thelma and Louise for a podcast. She thought, I can't wait till you get to Thelma and Louise, she said. She likes it.
Sorry to dance. Sorry to this.
Sorry to this one, yeah. Mum will not understand that meme reference if she listens. But, yeah.
People you respect like the film, don't they, Brianna? I've seen people, I know that people who you like are sharing stuff from this film. I don't want to name names. I was literally about to. Someone you know in a professional
was there a version before this of Thelma and Louise?
This is the
original.
Did they write this for this?
Yeah, this is not based on anything. This is it.
What did you think?
Whoa, I thought they'd done this in the 60s.
Like a remake.
Yeah.
Like a Star is Born.
The 60s version of Thelma and Louise would be great.
All the references to Thelma and Louise come out of this movie.
Yeah.
It is. I think I know what you mean, because I feel like I had, maybe not very recently.
Why did you think?
No, that? I think I understand. I'm not gonna. Like, I don't want to speak on behalf of you.
Why is that so funny?
I don't know.
It feels like a classic, right? It feels like a throwback classic.
Yeah, it does.
It feels like a TV movie version of it.
When we started watching, Dan was saying, like, oh, it's crazy that they did this. They got away with doing this in the 90s. And I was like, yeah, man, this is 60s.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's just, like, it is like a weird remake. Like, okay.
I guess I get it.
Well, because, and I mean, this is why I don't like the film. The film feels really conservative to me.
Sure.
The film...
Should we? I feel like before we start really just shredding this film... We should maybe, I mean, for those who haven't seen, we should say the synopsis of this film. We should say what this film is.
Sure. It's about two nice friends.
It's about two nice friends, Thelma and Louise.
Yeah, they're good friends.
Played by Susan Sarandon.
Yeah.
I had some trouble with the pronunciation.
You said the original had, like, there was a lot more homoerotic tension.
No, we were saying it was surprising how little homoerotic tension was in this film.
Okay, sometimes, Brandon, which is quite right, worried that maybe I... experiences of the world don't match up at all.
let's work it out on the podcast.
Brianna does.
Joe and I are getting married next December, by the way.
Brianna does have. I said this before. Brianna, like, I adore Brianna's takes on movies because I make her watch movies, and you're genuinely unpredictable.
There was a wonderful moment, which to jump a little bit ahead in the plot, when Thelma and Louise get very stressed out because they've shot and killed a man. And Brianna, you asked why they were so stressed out.
you did. Yeah, you were like, what's going on here?
They're so worried.
I just can't.
Yeah, but see, well, the way that the tone set up at the beginning, you think they'd just laugh at that.
Well,
that's true.
That's a really good point, and kind of why this film is so insane, right? Yeah. Because it starts off, Thelma and Louise are... Louise is in her diner. She's a waitress. Thelma's at home with an insane cartoon of a husband who is
played
by Shooter McGavin. Do you know what that actor's actual name is?
I know. I got arrested recently for a DUI. Oh, that's sad. So sorry to this man.
Okay, and they are arranging a trip together on the phone.
Yeah.
And
Because Brianna being here is maybe extremely silly.
No, that's fine.
Really trying it's hard a bit to keep it together.
It's a silly film.
It is a silly
film. It's a very silly film. It's a silly and film. I understood Thelma and Louise as having a function as kind of an object of academic study with respect to kind of feminism and queer theory.
Yeah.
And I feel like I've definitely read academic papers that spend a lot of time with Thelma and Louise, despite never having seen this film.
Really? This
yeah,
movie?
Definitely,
this
yes. It's absolutely it's taken very seriously.
I guess that's what Brianna's talking about.
This movie.
Okay. I hope everyone knows the Kiki Palmer
meme. Sorry to this man, Kiki Palmer. It's golden.
It's really good.
It's really
good.
There's
something about the cadence that makes it like...
I mean, this is not the Kiki Palmer cast, but there is like three about that. I've watched the entire video, actually.
To see that in the context.
GQ, or Vogue or whatever.
It's the way she says...
She's being interviewed about... Like, so she's hooked up to a lie detector test, and they're asking her whether she knows things. Actress, she's in Hustlers. She is shown a picture of Dick Cheney. She says she doesn't know who Dick Cheney is. Look it up. I'm not going to repeat.
Well, because you're right about there being three sections. She goes, like, I don't mean to sound ridiculous, but this man could...
I don't know who this man is. he could be walking down the street. I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man.
It's the musicality.
I wouldn't know a thing. Sorry to this man. Genuinely transcendent.
It's incredible.
Anyway,
I was mean to Brianna about the remake thing, but I guess I understand what you're saying.
No, I think
about,
that's totally
like,
plausible.
So it makes sense that you would think the film that people are dealing with, like, critically and seriously, is some version of this film that exists in the 60s. And is, like, genuinely groundbreaking.
It also feels like its politics are kind of quite 60s in a lot of ways. This kind of rebelliousness is a very 60s rebelliousness.
It doesn't... What does it offer? Its entire positions are anti. That sounds like I'm being some kind of whatever. But, like, that's what... What is conservatism but a resistance to change? And this film feels weirdly resistant to change.
I think you're going to have to be more explicit about what that means. Because I'm not entirely sure.
Well, like... Do we have any conservative fans of the Brad Pitt cast?
Send us an email at thebradpittcast@gmail.com.
The conservative mindset is one of saying, this is wrong, this is bad, this is wrong, and not advocating for anything, which is...
It's reactionary.
It's regressive and reactionary. So is Thelma and Louise to me. I don't see any productive, generative conversation.
Okay. I'm interested in what that means, maybe, but I feel like it is at least kicking against the establishment in a jouissance kind of way. It's just having a good time. It's a Lacanian term for orgasm, basically. I don't know why that came to my mind, but it's just expressing itself. It's id-ish, right? It's going all. I think that's.
Well, you said it's
I don't know if I like
wish
it.
Fulfillment and fantasy
think,
fulfillment.
Yeah.
It's like a wig, you know?
Yeah.
With lip gloss, I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Well, because it's worth saying, Brianna, you're like, you're a photographer, so your requirements for film are like 85% aesthetic. And do you think you switched off from this film because it's not very, it's quite daggy?
Yeah, I guess so. But there's... nothing to really look at. Although, Dan
was really trying to sell us on this being a beautifully shot film.
The color palette.
How beautiful such and such a shot was. And Dan, at points you were right. It was lovely. But
a lot of shots of driving in the desert that are quite beautiful.
It's great. Yeah, that was good.
But, I mean, yes. I think they go on a road trip.
Sure.
Thelma and Louise.
Sure, that's their names.
That we know them. They stop at a bar.
Yeah.
And they're having a good time at the bar. Thelma is taken outside by a man who attempts
in a genuinely unpleasant
her
scene.
Yeah, genuinely horrifying.
I mean, this is a callback, but
yeah.
Brianna and I live in a share house. We have housemates that walk past, and Kieran, my housemate, sometimes I'll be watching a two-hour film and Kieran or Beryl, my other housemate, always walk through at the most upsetting part where I just look like I'm sitting there with my, like, hot chips watching, like, an extremely unpleasant assault.
Yeah.
Like, really unpleasant.
I think it's notable, the particular unpleasantness of this scene is notable because it is, and obviously this is kind of intentional, right? You have a sense of joy and freedom, and then the kind of horror of the patriarchy intervenes.
Sure.
So it's a radical tonal shift. And I don't think that's like a mistake on the film's part.
I wish it was more radical, though.
Pretty radical. Okay, well, I think now is the time to point out that we, due to whatever the circumstances we found ourselves in, watched the TV edit of Thelma and Louise,
which so funny.
Is insane. And obviously cut out, including, I think, cut out the more explicit... this is the first time I've seen the film. I think it cut out the more explicit elements of the sex scene with the subject of this podcast, Brad yeah. Pitt, which was a shame. But also, every time someone said Jesus Christ, it was replaced with Judas Priest.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Oh,
wow. I really thought, because the first person to... And I haven't seen this film in, like, over a decade. The first person to say Judas Priest is Gina Davis. And I thought she was just being, like... all cute, because she's kind of like a...
folksy.
That's her character, is quite folksy, yeah, but no.
No, TV edit.
And the dude whose tanker they blow up calls them witches.
That's right. Which I kind I didn't even pick that up, of course.
Yeah.
That's very stupid.
Yeah, and he's completely ADR'd over.
Yeah, he says fuck you at some point, and it's replaced with something like get lost, or something, just something totally innocuous. And... often the ADR are obviously not done by the people who... it's not done by the actors. It's done by people doing imitations of their voices.
It's also extremely bizarre to me that... Brianna, by the way, Brianna does have a sinus infection. You're welcome to leave at any point.
This is not... You're not being forced out.
Just, I'll take my leave. No, I'm sitting here listening.
Yeah, yeah, hang out.
It's interesting to me that... so this is the TV edit... can't have swearing, can't have Jesus Christ. You can have enough of an extremely upsetting rape.
Yeah.
That's not edited out. I guess you need it for plot purposes. Yeah. And maybe they trimmed down as much as they could, but like, it's really unpleasant.
It's very unpleasant. And so as he is beginning to assault her, Susan Sarandon, Louise, shows up with a gun that she has brought, which was kind of jokingly referenced earlier.
For no reason. That is the biggest, like,
yeah, she says there might be bears or something on the road trip. I mean, you can understand why you take a gun. It's America, right? You don't need that much plot to persuade you that people
it's
bring
very
a gun
Chekhov's gunny.
It's, I mean, yeah.
Literally.
And she confronts Harlan, I think the man's name is.
Yeah.
And he backs off. And they're walking away, and Louise shoots him and kills him.
Yeah.
Which is, they've already kind of resolved the situation, and she still shoots him. Which, you know, fair enough, but obviously now they're in trouble. And that's the MacGuffin that kind of sets the plot going.
I don't even know if it's a MacGuffin, though, because this is ostensibly a road trip buddy comedy film.
Hmm.
Nothing really happens other than the plot of being chased by the police.
Well, that's what I mean in terms of MacGuffin, right? They've shot a man, so the police are after them. That's the driving
force. I guess, but there's no sense of, like... I guess this is... So this film was written by a woman called Kelly Curry, who... this was like a big breakout thing for her. She won Best Screenplay at the Oscars. If there's one thing that Brianna loves more than me talking about movies, it's me talking about Oscars. Is it your favourite thing?
No.
I tried to show you the other day a clip of P.T. Anderson and Fiona Apple at the Oscars, and you were trying to fall asleep, and I was like, look, Brianna, it's PTA, and there's Alan Ball.
This is what happens when your parents don't get you into sports as a kid.
You know what? It's genuinely true. There's my dad, who is like responsible for this mess, is always like, it's just men. We just like this. And I don't know if I agree with that. But
movies.
The obsessive
list making
yeah. And look at that guy, you know that guy, he's from that other thing, and he's standing next to
him. Categories, man. Love categories.
Yeah,
love making podcasts categories.
I mean, the film just becomes like an extremely bizarre, boring police procedural with Harvey Keitel, who I usually
and Stephen Tobolowsky, the character actor.
Yeah, just following. So, were you present for any of this? Had you checked out?
I left just after Brad Pitt came in.
Sure.
Yeah, the worst time to leave.
Made my dinner and I came back, and they were driving through what looked like New Mexico.
I think Texas.
Because they're trying. Because
they went across the border.
Pitt's extremely southern in this film.
Yeah. I didn't really notice. He was Brad Pitt to me.
Do you like Brad Pitt?
Sure I do. Yeah, he's great. It's weird seeing him. He looked like a little kid in this movie.
Do you think? You look very young.
Yeah.
Well, because Dan and I were trying to decide, because he, to me, looks older in this film than he has in previous films that we've
definitely watched. I mean, he literally is. It might be one reason. But yeah, he looks more comfortable in his body in this film, which is a major thing.
Did you think he was good, Brianna?
He seemed fine. How old was he in this film?
That's a fantastic question.
I think he'd be like 27, which seems too old. But I seem to remember that
he's old.
We should really know this.
He's old in Dark Side of the Sun. Let me Google Bradley J. Pitt's birthday.
Maybe we'll cut this out. Maybe we won't. We'll see how it goes.
Let's keep it in. It's the joy. I was
on the fly.
Absolutely, almost gonna write. See, this is celebrity culture, man. You type in Brad Pitt's name, and all Google wants to show you is like alimony, split from Angelina, court. Yeah. This stuff is still going on. They split like a long time ago.
It's unseemly.
Fucked. It is. I'm calling for it to end right now.
Did he have to like work a bar job for a long time before he got... Is this a movie where he got famous and he just needed to make a whole bunch of money?
Yes. Before this film... Well, he didn't make a lot of money off this film. He auditioned for this film. So he wasn't a name actor at all. It wasn't like Ridley Scott was like, I want that guy. But prior to this point, I mean, we touched on this briefly, but like he thought he wanted to be a journalist.
Yeah.
He liked acting. He was in the films that Dan and I have covered, which are not big films, not really seen. Some of them aren't released till after this film.
Mm.
In terms of what's actually come out, it's been Cutting Class. And I think Across the Tracks isn't actually released most places till like 93. So he's basically nowhere. And then, everyone's... I don't know why this is the... I mean, he's good in this film.
He's very pretty. He's really... This is the hottest Brad Pitt we've had so far by some way, I would say.
But does stuff like this happen anymore? Do people in this smaller role... Because I'm thinking about who are the people like this who were transformed into icons. And I'm thinking...
Who was that guy from...
Timothée Chalamet. Who was that I was going to say? Is that who you were going to say?
No, but, I mean, he's a good example. But he's, like, 12. I mean, he's...
he is. Who are you going to say? Jennifer Lawrence, I guess. But that's what I mean. She's in Winter's Bone. That's, like, a big film.
She's also, like, a child in that, basically, as well.
Pitt is basically just eye candy in this film.
Yeah, I can't think of an equivalent.
I can't think of an
equivalent. A contemporary equivalent.
I guess it's shit like... Do you remember the Fiji Water Girl? At the Academy Awards, but everyone forgot about her. There was some girl who in the back of a photograph.
I do remember that.
Who was like really posing at some award ceremony and upstaging the actors.
But I mean, content moves too quickly these days.
It does. I think
he would become a meme maybe and then disappear in a week.
Yeah. And what even is the meme? Oh, I don't know.
It's
sorry.
Yeah.
That's how humor works. Now. You just go like, hey, remember that thing I talked about last time? But we were trying to decide, is he hot in this film, though? I'm not convinced he's...
Yeah, of course he is.
He's hotter. He's not... He's like Timothée Chalamet, like pretty in a box hot.
I disagree. I mean, look.
It's not like a turned on, like, jabam. It's like a, you know, there's that Fiona Apple line, I'm... A still life drawing of a peach, I'm amorous and out of reach.
It's a good line.
That's what he feels like to me in this film.
Unattainable.
Unattainable.
Fantasy.
He doesn't fit into my... He doesn't live in the same world as me. So how could I ever seduce him or be seduced by him?
I'll buy that. I mean, look, this is not something on which... As much as I find Brad Pitt very attractive, I feel like I'm not the best authority to be
What's making. The hottest Brad Pitt that we have covered on this podcast so far?
Oh, definitely this. Definitely Thelma Louise.
He's way hotter in Ad Astra.
Okay, yeah, I agree. Okay, he's hotter in Ad Astra.
Do you think
he's an emotional wreck in Ad Astra? That's
he's,
not hot.
He's so hot in that film.
He's very assured when he's not an emotional wreck.
When he's got those big baby blues and he's just staring into that. No!
Mm-mm.
What the hell?
You think he's hotter in Thelma and Louise than Ad Astra?
Well, I mean, I didn't really see enough. Oh, that's a proposition. I guess Thelma and Louise, yeah.
He's hotter?
If you think, I don't know, in Ad Astra, like, you get that sense, like, so he's in outer space and, like, the windows are reflective.
Go on. I don't know where the fuck this is going, but keep it going.
You really get the sense that he's looking at his own reflection whenever he's looking visibly into the
That's
distance.
A wonderful interpretation of Ad Astra.
I do not know how your brain works. I genuinely... So he's less or more attractive?
Less.
Because he's checking himself out?
Possibly. But not so much that. There's nothing wrong with checking yourself out. But, like, I don't know.
If you were to do a fuck, marry, kill with the Brad Pitts we've done so far...
Of course, you'd have to fuck
Thelma and Louise.
No,
and you marry Ad Astra.
No, you would not.
You'd marry Ad Astra. You'd have to get a lot of marriage counsel.
The whole point of Ad Astra is you don't marry Ad Astra Brad Pitt. That's the whole fucking 2 hours of that movie.
But he comes back to it. He's in a restaurant with
Marry Cutting Class Brad Pitt. Obviously.
What happened in Cutting Class?
That's he's the true. Good boy.
He is the good boy, he's... and you think he's the bad boy, but he's actually the good boy.
He's the one who looks after you and protects you.
Does he get murdered?
No, you almost. Think he's the murderer.
You think he's the murderer, and you think he's going to get murdered, and neither is the case.
He saves her. He's a real good boy. What the fuck with you? You marry Ad Astra. James Gray has gone completely over your head.
He's got a profession.
He's in space all the time.
To provide for his family. I think I just like. Never present.
I like yearning.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't know if he's capital H hot in this film, I'm afraid. Which is maybe why I'm confused.
But I think that might be an insane thing to say.
Look, you've got two people on the couch opposite you telling you that he was like, fuck, marry, kill, fuck, hot.
I guess so. Yeah. I don't think it's an accident that I keep...
You're losing a war here.
Returning to Timothée Chalamet, who's someone who I don't get the obsession with. Maybe because one of his... fans threatened to kill me that time.
That's right.
Did they?
I wrote a real bad review of Beautiful Boy, and they sent the single craziest email I've ever got. Do you want me to read it? But Chalamet is also one of those people who just seems like a wet towel. Like, why am I meant to be sexually attracted to that?
I mean, Call Me By Your Name, he's...
So he...
I don't know if you... I think you want to... Joe. I think you want to... Sure. No, it's true. It's a wonderful film. I think you want to... Do you want to be him and Call Me By Your Name?
He sends me the... I got an email after I badly reviewed his film.
I think so.
Beautiful Boy. And Sophie C said, do you think actions have consequences? Which is such a good opening line. Yes, I do, actually.
It's consequentialist.
Do you really think you're going to get away with trashing a popular actor? All work and no play, Joseph. Angry face.
Shining reference.
To which I guess I say, thanks for calling me Joseph, not Joe. That was back when the lines were clearly drawn.
Respect.
Anyway, Chalamet is not sexual to me. Even when he's eating a cum-flavoured peach. That's not he's not sexual.
I actually don't think Call Me By Your Name is a movie about sex. I think it's about
maybe
Italy.
Maybe to its deficit.
I don't know if I agree with that. I've only seen it once. I found it very moving.
It's kind of pretty, that film.
Yeah.
But it's meant to be about, like...
I think it's about loss. Loss and that's the Italian countryside.
Call Me By Your Name is a perfect example of that film that when I think about in retrospect, I think, I don't like that film. And then I watch it and I'm like, this is quite undeniable. The final shot is so powerful and such a fantastic thesis
and
statement.
Sufjan.
Yeah.
I watched 4 hours of that.
Do you know the story about Sufjan? That Sufjan was shown the assembly cut of that film. Uh-huh. And it was just him and Luca Guadagnino, the director, sitting side by side in like a screening room. And the lights came up and Sufjan was so emotionally overwhelmed by the film that he was like crying. And Guadagnino was crying too. They had this moment of like real movement.
Uh-huh.
And Sufjan describes it as they were both so raw emotionally that they just had this insane interaction where Guadagnino was like, what can I do for you? Like, I'll do anything for you. Because they had this rawness. And Sufjan's like, give me your jacket. And Guadagnino handed over his jacket, which was like a $2,000 Louis Vuitton jacket. And Sufjan still has the jacket.
Oh, I love both those, man. What incredible. Just...
The assembly cut also had a narration. Had Chalamet narrating it. And Sufjan's like, you have to take it out. This ruins the film.
Sufjan Stevens is a man of taste.
He's a good boy.
He's a genius.
Although,
anyway.
Didn't you tweet recently what happens if I listen to nothing
but
Carrie?
I've been listening to a lot of
Carrie
Mulligan recently.
That's not helpful.
We don't need to delve into that. It's a perfect album. I've been making my best of the decade list. It was number one. I got into it. Anyway.
Fiona Apple's The Idler Wheel is clearly number one.
I disagree. I love that album. I listened to it a lot when it came out. I haven't returned to it much. I should.
You're just hurt because he said that Carrie and Lowell didn't fix anything.
That, yeah.
That's, didn't make him feel better.
That stays with me. It, well, he said it wasn't cathartic.
It's real. I can see it in your eyes, the horror.
Do we have left? Anyway, this is going to be very confusing for the people who don't have the specific cultural reference points that we are drilling down into. What I want to return to, I feel like we're basically, I think we should just talk through Brad Pitt's entrance into the film.
I'd love that.
I mean, what happens in between? They go on the run.
Yeah.
They meet Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Susan Sarandon does not want Gina Davis to sleep with Brad Pitt, and she ultimately
Him. He's a hitchhiker.
And he's a bad boy.
Well, we think initially that he's a good boy.
But he's a bad boy.
He turns out to be a bad boy right at the end.
He steals all their money.
Does
and
he?
They have to rob a bank.
Yeah.
Yeah. You missed that.
Oh, God. That's...
Scales are full. He's not so fuckable now, is he?
So, they initially reject him from being hitchhiked.
Yeah.
And then they are driving down the road, and we see this incredible side-on shot, kind of at a wide shot of Pitt, like, sitting next to a barn on some kind of concrete block or something, some box. And
which
just,
is
just lounging. He lounges. He's entirely. I think this is where Pitt perfects the lounge.
Yeah.
And I think the lounge is extraordinarily important because
the horizontality.
Character. Yeah, the laconic kind of lackadaisical.
Yeah. We thought about. I don't know if we've said
Thelma and Louise entering. This is the last third of Thelma and Louise is just sirens, basically.
Yeah, it's true. That's why we deliberately had the police go by. I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast, but we talked broadly. You know, we're having so much fucking fun doing Brad Pitt that we often have conversations of like, what do we do after this? Or what do we do? And we floated the idea of like being like, maybe this should be a podcast called American Objects and Brad Pitt is the first American object.
Yeah.
Whether or not we do that, this is the film that he's such an American object in this film.
True. He's wearing a cowboy hat. As well be chewing on a like...
Yeah.
Stick of wheat.
Yeah, he somehow is walking.
Whittling, he could be whittling.
He somehow, one hand, feels like representative of the American, I should say the white American colonizer, not America as it truly is, the white American colonizer tradition.
Absolutely.
And also the very contemporary. That's how he seems in this film. He's like, he's just fallen out of MTV and also a picture book.
It's got some John Voight in Midnight Cowboy vibes, actually.
Sure. I mean, the great thing about Midnight Cowboy is that John Voight inhabits that character and then realizes that it's sad and lonely and he doesn't like it. What a fucking good film.
That's Midnight a wonderful Cowboy movie. Is. But so Pitt in this is also, as you like, when you discover that he's kind of a bad guy, you see he's been kind of inhabiting this cowboy character a little bit. Like he's been playing into it.
Sure. As a hustler.
When he's in the hotel room with Gina Davis, he reveals to her that he has been robbing.
Do you think he's only sleeping with her to rob her, though? I think he's an opportunist. I think he cared for her, and then he sleeps with her, and then he takes an opportunity. No?
He turned up at the hotel room.
True.
Like, he knocks on the door. It seems like it's an ulterior motive. I would like to think that Brad Pitt is not just out for money.
I also think it's worth saying, and we discussed this when it was on, so this film was written by a woman. But it was directed by
Ridley Scott.
Not only a man, but also a man who's like, you would probably say, is bad at handling women in most of his films. Because most of his films simply don't have women. I mean, there's a woman in the Counselor, his masterpiece, one of the greatest films of the last 20 years. But she gets her head chopped off and left on a garbage dump. The woman in The
Gladiator. That's also written by Cormac McCarthy, which is a real intersection of misogyny and toxic masculinity.
You know, Gladiator, Russell Crowe's wife is murdered. Like, where's a strong woman in the cinema? Oh, Alien, obviously. But Blade Runner, Sigourney. Women hunted down.
They're robots.
Which I'm not trying to be, like, woke points about this, but I think it's...
Brianna?
I think this film... has ultimately a regressive view of some of its own politics because of Ridley Scott's direction. You're just staring at me. You're so far away from the mic that even if you said anything, it wouldn't be picked up.
Sorry. Look, I think I have to go to bed.
I get it.
I get it.
Me too.
You said some cool things about the film before you left. Do you remember any of them?
No.
You said something about its politics.
The kind of particular nature of the fantasy. as being kind of liberated but non-violent.
Sure, sure. We were talking about this as fantasy for women, and you said it plays into a fantasy of wanting to inhabit the...
masculine.
Or the misogynistic role and act with the freedom of men. You're staring at me
Yeah.
It was good. It was real good. Because I said I wanted the film to be more violent, and you said no, because those fantasies aren't violent.
Right.
It's real bad optics for me if I'm mansplaining your own point of view for you. Can you just...
I clearly need it explained to me. I mean, I don't know.
What do you think about them driving off the end? Just give us a final word on the climax of Thelma and Louise. Good, bad. The 25 minutes that you watch, what do you give out of 10?
What?
Like, what do you rate them?
What, the final, like, 10 minutes?
Or the whole thing, inclusive of the final.
I wish there had been less of, you know how there's all the, like, focusing on the guys being like, you can't shoot women and all that kind of stuff, you know?
The guys reacting badly to what they're doing.
Yeah, to what's going on. I just wish it had been, like, just only on them and no men. I think it would have been nice.
Okay. No Brad Pitt, then?
Oh, no, I mean in the final, like, scenes.
Oh, yeah.
You obviously need men in the whole film, but, like, just in the final.
Just thing. Focus on their friendship.
Yeah, it distracted from the weirdness of them just completely, you know, making a pact to plunge to their death. And within the space of, like, 5 seconds. That was cool. I liked that.
You did like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It does feel... I mean, the final scene is like, in its maximality, kind of ties everything together.
Sure. It retrospectively makes the film...
You want to fix things in order logical. To... Because the ending is so good. You want to mentally excuse shit.
I think that...
You just can't excuse that beginning.
There's some heinous stuff.
Yeah, there are some extraordinarily unsophisticated juvenile exchanges that just could be written so much better consistently.
Maybe that's only in the TV edit.
It really could be. We could be doing a real disservice. And I want this out. I want if people get mad at us for hating on this classic, it was because we watched the TV edit. There's nothing we could do.
But you mentioned the classic thing. Brianna, absolutely. Yeah, please feel free to go. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brianna.
It's a pleasure. All right. Yeah. I feel what I just want to say is my final word is that...
Are you going to say something mean about me?
No.
just let it speak, Jared.
I'm sorry.
You guys seem really stressed out about not liking Thelma and Louise. Are you not allowed to hate it? Do you get cancelled if you
I think it's just a classic. I expected to like it. I think my stress is a bunch of people told me they liked it. I thought I would like it. And I do not understand. I think I worked really hard to find something in this film... Like, latch onto something. I feel like I'm missing something. Well,
I was going to say about the classic status. I know it's kind of... But is it... And this is maybe a hot take, but, like, I think of it as a classic in a way that, like, Forrest Gump was a classic. In, like, very talked about, kind of iconic...
Yeah, that's a bad movie.
Yeah, but
it's
bad.
A terrible film.
But, like, Forrest Gump, and, like, everyone knows their life is like a box of chocolate line, just like they know Thelma and Louise plunging off the cliff, but... Does anyone get upset if you say that you don't like this film?
Also a film...
I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will find out. Email bradpittcast@gmail.com. I think...
Do we have an email there yet?
No. No one's emailed.
Okay, please email.
Please send us something. We know you're listening. We can see the stats.
That sounds so cool.
Forrest Gump also is a film that deals with some really heavy themes as well. It's like, oh, wow.
Forrest Gump is like weird boomer fantasy.
Yeah, I'm... Again, maybe you have this odd... Was that a similar year? Was that like 93 or something?
That's interesting. It's around the same time as Pulp Fiction, because famously Gump beats Fiction at all of the Oscars.
Was that 94? 90,
I think,
yeah.
I think so. Pulp Fiction, not a good film either. Okay. Might as well say it. Last time we said all that uncontroversial...
Didn't Brad Pitt actually say... I remember him saying at the Oscars once that movies get more fantastical and ridiculous and, like, fantastical around recessions. Wasn't there a recession in the 90s? Should I tap out?
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he did.
When?
That's interesting.
I wish he said. I mean, fact. I hope he says that.
Me too.
He's great.
Yeah, no, he said in times of hardship, like financial hardship, people want movies.
Oh, sure. He was introducing Shape of Water at the Oscars,
no,
maybe?
No, it was during the financial crisis, 2008. You know, because they were all reflecting on, like, you know, everyone had just lost their jobs and freaked out. And, like, everything was shit. And then there was Hollywood being like, we've still got the Oscars. Like,
they always do that.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Oscars or something?
I don't know what happened, to be honest with you. I guess I must have seen it on TV, on the news or something.
Okay. Well, we'll look and that up.
Me. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry. A housemate just walked in.
That's all right.
Distracted me. All right. I'm going now.
Thanks, Brianna.
Thank you, Brianna. Thank you so much. Will you be back on the podcast?
Can we cut that bit out? Like, I don't know anything about economics.
Yeah, we can cut that out.
Let's keep it.
We'll see.
Okay,
you can get a final
round. Maybe fact check on Wikipedia and then...
I mean, we make mistakes all the time.
You know what I realized the other day that caused me, like, ongoing existential angst?
Okay, bye.
Bye, Brianna.
Bye. Thanks, Brianna. I confused Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street in the Cutting Class episode.
Oh.
I didn't confuse... I said the wrong name at a certain point.
Okay, we're back. We just had a brief break.
We also realized that
left and
we realized that we were recording off the laptop mic, which means that the audio quality so far will not be as good as it presumably is now.
So sorry about that. That was at least it was recorded.
Look how fucking big the waveforms are now.
This is definitely much higher quality audio through our professional Yeti podcasting mic. Microphone.
Yeti, fucking sponsor the Brad Pitt cast. So,
where were we?
Well, I mean, I guess we're trundling to the end. I guess it's worth briefly talking about the Harvey Keitel subplot that we kind of haven't talked about. We mentioned
that... We could also afford to talk a little more about Brad Pitt.
Sure.
I genuinely think there's more to mine there. But let's talk about the Harvey Keitel subplot.
Well, so Keitel is a police officer in a aggressively pointless subplot. What do you lose if you cut out Harvey Keitel? You cut out single thing. He's not very good, though.
You don't lose anything. You lose a very strange scene, a very strange moment, at least, when they're plummeting to their deaths. I mean, obviously, we haven't even explained that this was what happens in the film, but they continue to run from the police until right at the end they come up against the Grand Canyon, and they choose, rather than to be taken by the police, to drive their car over the ground into the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And as they are doing that, Harvey Keitel, in slow motion, who... has been playing off Stephen Tobolowsky, who is the bad cop, I guess, and Harvey Keitel is kind of the good cop. Is
Tobolowsky bad cop? He's badder.
He's badder. He's kind of a nip. He thinks, you know, we should chase him down. We need to use all the forces at our disposal. And Harvey Keitel seems to want to be nice to them.
This is like a broader thing that I just go on.
I was just going to say there's this very weird moment as they're driving across the cliff that Harvey Keitel in slow motion is waving his hand and chasing them down like he's chasing someone who's like dropped their wallet.
It's extremely bizarre.
It's odd. I think there's a lot of moments where this film... We haven't talked about the soundtrack. We should talk about the soundtrack a little bit. Where this film seems to want to really cash out your emotions that it hasn't done anything to earn. It's not even that it's failed to earn them. It doesn't even seem to have tried.
I guess...
Anyway, yeah.
There's maybe an extent to which we're talking about this with the bias of hindsight that... You know, I guess... You know, sometimes I have, I guess, impulses that could be snobby, which maybe is something that I tackle with because, like, I love lowbrow stuff. Sure. And I guess that's why I struggle so much with the snobbiness is... Like, I was thinking when it was... I mean, you said when you were watching this, we were watching this film, imagine this film is a slasher and be generous to it.
Yeah.
And I wasn't being very generous to it. And I guess the reason I wasn't was because I felt it was quite safe. I feel like the film doesn't actually risk that much. I feel like it's... I mean, the rape is extremely upsetting. Obviously, the patriarchy is real and toxic and, you know, enacts real harm every single day.
And there's a way in this film, in which this film joyfully subverts it. Genuinely, sure. I think, at a number of points. We haven't talked about Michael Madsen as well.
But I was thinking maybe the reason why it feels safe to me is literally hindsight.
Yeah.
Maybe there are just necessary films. You know, Ang Lee, the director, is... he's just made this film, Gemini Man, on like an extremely high frame rate. That's insane. He's doing it to fix the problem of high frame rate cinema for future filmmakers. And so Gemini Man itself...
There's a fly in the room that you may be able to hear on the mic, but Joe, please continue talking about Gemini Man.
This is fucking chaos, this episode.
This is a chaotic episode.
Yeah, it's fine. Everyone has one eventually.
Definitely.
Ang Lee, so maybe Gemini Man is itself not a complete success, but it leads to further successes. I think there.
I don't think it will. But no, sure, maybe.
No one fucking wants a high frame rate. It looks like dog shit. It looks like garbage. It looks so bad. So maybe the thing is that that's kind of what Thelma and Louise is. Like, awkward and maybe not, for us now, entirely convincing as a film.
Hmm.
But maybe it opens maybe the door.
Maybe it does set up a few specific things that couldn't have been done otherwise.
I mean, it's something that happens in literature all the time, right? Like, yeah. You look back at stuff like... nothing comes to... I mean, I've been reading this book, but this is a different example. I've been reading this book called Ceremony by Leslie
Martin. Oh, yeah, Zucker, I read that. Yeah.
Which I like that book. There's some parts of it that maybe feel slightly... Tokenistic is the wrong word. Regressive is also the wrong word. Pat, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
And that's just because you write your books for the culture of the times, and cultures change. And so maybe, I mean, I love Ceremony a lot more than Thelma and Louise.
Mm.
But maybe there is just some texts just break down a barrier and are valuable for that, even if they're not valuable, always 100% as experiential works of art.
Yeah, sure.
Dan, maybe. I'm trying to be nice.
No, I know. I think you're doing a pretty good job.
Because I just don't think it's functional as a film. I don't think it's
functional. Yeah, I agree. It's,
I don't like...
It's not coherent, perhaps. It definitely... It is not a set of parts contributing to a whole that just is greater than the parts.
So much feels unnecessary. I mean, you say, let's talk about Michael Madsen, but like... You could cut Madsen's character. Yeah,
I guess you could say... Like, very little feels essential. In fact, I'll tell you what. You know what one of the... The only things that is not Thelma or Louise that does feel essential? Brad Pitt.
Bradley J. Pitt. Yeah. And that's because of him. I don't think that's necessarily because of the character on the page. I agree. Because, I mean, this is...
He's in the film for maybe 15 minutes. Maybe less.
Yeah.
Probably less. There's the first scene where he gets picked up. There's the... they refuse to pick him up. There's the scene when they pick him up. Then there's the scene where... He goes to the hotel, and then there's the scene where he gets interrogated.
Yeah, by Keitel.
By Keitel, which is a kind of funny, like it's filmed a lot of kind of really close up intimate face shots in this film.
I think
which
it's sometimes badly work really directed. Well
and sometimes work very badly.
I think it's mostly badly directed. I was mentioning my issues with Scott before, but like, you know, he's one of those people. You know, there's that meme that goes around a lot that people are always like, never tweet.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott, because he's made so many films, he's made way more worse films than he's made good films.
Yeah.
Like, he's completely fucked up the ratio.
Sure.
He's a never tweet in regards to making movies. Like, just don't make any more movies. Because when I watch a film like this, I'm like, maybe Scott is a bad director.
Mm. And he's just lucked into the
Just lucked into Alien, transcendent film. He's lucked into The Counselor.
Blade Runner.
Blade
Runner's a good movie.
I think Blade Runner 2049 is better than Blade Runner. Like, significantly better.
Sure.
I'm moved by... Blade Runner is just this weird object.
What's the name of the... Villeneuve is a... He's a hit and miss director.
I'm almost 100% in on him.
Okay.
The only Villeneuve that I don't like is...
Arrival. I like Arrival. I'm not sure about Sicario. Anyway.
Are you not? No. Let's litigate this briefly. Go on, I'm so excited. I love...
What is... Amy is in Sicario...
Sicario isn't an Amy. No,
oh, who is it?
It's Hooji Wuzzy. Don't look at me like that, Dan. You know, Blunt.
Oh, Emily Blunt, of course. I'm so sorry. Yeah.
You don't like Sicario?
I think it's a bit...
I'm 100% on that film. Okay. Go on, tell me why you're not.
I mean, it's a while since I've seen it. It has some beautiful shots. It has some wonderful set pieces. It's fun, but it's messy. And it's very American imperialist in a way that I find a little bit unnerving.
Do you think? How so?
I think so. I mean, all the it didn't separate itself completely from something like Rambo Last Blood, right? Where Mexico is this kind of land of horrors.
But I think it does via the subplot of the guy with his son, and you're like, who the fuck is this?
That's true.
And I think, although that... I mean, the whole point of that subplot is how banal it is. I think because it's saying to you, like, every one of these people has lives like that.
I enjoyed it enough. I just didn't love it. There were moments I found very exhilarating.
I think that traffic jam set piece is like one of the top 10 set pieces in action cinema in the last like 50 years.
I think that's fine. I think I might agree with that. That traffic jam set piece rings in my ears.
There's so much from that film that rings in my ears. When she shoots a hole in the wall and there's a dead body in there.
That's right.
When she's having a shower and there's blood coming down her head because she's got a cut on her head.
The scene with all the immigrants in the big warehouse is really evocative.
Yeah.
Maybe Kaluuya, I just think it doesn't work.
Is so good in that film. Benicio del Toro, who's one of my all-time favorites, is like, that's one of his best performances, maybe.
Sure.
Although, have you seen Escape from Dannemora?
No.
You haven't? Have you seen the scene that people distributed?
I don't think so.
There's a scene where... This is the end of this tangent.
That's all right.
There's a scene where Benicio del Toro is saying... It's a film about based on a true story about a prison warden who ended up having sex with two prisoners and helped them escape. And del Toro is one of the prisoners. And there's a scene where all he has to say to his love interest, who's... what's her name from Boyhood? Arquette. Patricia Arquette. All he has to say to Patricia Arquette is, don't tell anybody.
Mm.
And he's meant to say it in a threatening way. But he's... I don't know if I can imitate it. He goes like... No, I don't think... He goes like, don't tell anybody. Exactly like that.
You really blew out the waves.
It really did. He sounds like Cookie Monster, like... after 10 years of like serious substance abuse problems. It's extraordinary. What a talent.
No, he's amazing.
He's the best. He's got
an extraordinary face.
He's the only actor who's ever properly acquitted himself in a Marvel film. I genuinely think that.
In Guardians of the Galaxy?
He's so good.
Okay.
Everyone else kind of feels like no one is having fun except for Benicio del Toro. Who's having fun in a Marvel movie?
Jeff Goldblum. I know. I have mixed feelings about Jeff Goldblum as well.
I know. I also don't like that movie.
I think it's a good movie. I like Taika Waititi. Look,
they're all bad. The Marvel movies, Dan.
Okay, is this your Scorsese take?
I'm with.
I agree. They're not. None of them are good.
I'm hiding this right here, burying this. Marvel movies. They're not good.
They're juvenile.
But they're not like. Like what?
They're moving pieces. They're like Scorsese called them theme park rides. They're theme park rides. They're not about thin. Cinema.
They look like shit.
But they also there's no sense of invention. Directors have 1,000 requirements for like the canon that they have to fit in.
Exactly. It's impossible. Could you ever make a good film like that?
It is art. It's bad art.
That's why the only good like entry in a franchise recently has been fucking what's his name? The Last Jedi. And that's precisely because they gave him full power and he used it to fucking piss on the entire franchise and piss on The Force Awakens and be like, fuck you, JJ, I don't want any... You could never do that in a Marvel movie. So of course there'll never be a good Marvel movie. Yeah.
You'll probably never be able to do it again in a Star Wars movie either.
Fuck my...
Yeah, okay.
No,
that's fair. Look, I don't want a job with Marvel. I don't mind burning that bridge.
The best superhero film is Batman Returns, the Tim Burton film. And that's because it's a Batman film where Batman doesn't appear. It's this big, weird, disgusting fetish object. Where's the horniness in Marvel cinema? Where's the life?
There's no energy.
Where's the stuff that I go to cinema for?
But it's not messy.
None of it is there.
That's fair. There's no Brad Pitt.
There's no Brad Pitt.
In any...
Do you think he would... Sometimes I worry that...
I don't think he would. I absolutely don't think he would.
It did feel like a turning point when Angelina Jolie said she was going to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
She felt like, I'm just going to direct movies now.
Yeah, and didn't work.
But, I mean, Pitt, all of his press, he's been saying, like, this is kind of it for me.
Yeah.
And I think it's because...
He just wants to produce.
Yeah. I think it's because he's like, I don't want to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
That's your options, right? You're in a Marvel movie every 2 years so you can fund the little projects and keep your star power up.
Yeah.
And maybe he's like, I don't care anymore.
I think that's fair. I mean, why would he, right?
But why do any of them?
Money, fame, power,
but they riches. Have all those things. Do they worry about waning? Do they worry that, like, if they don't stay in the public eye, people will forget about them?
I wonder if Robert Downey Jr. is still a model, right? It saved him.
I guess so.
Like, it did. It gave him a like. He could make the judge because he was an Iron Man. Oh,
Dr. Doolittle.
That looks so bad.
Do you know who that film is directed by?
I have no idea, actually.
Stephen Gagan, who was heralded as an extremely big deal. He wrote Traffic, the Steven Soderbergh film. He made Syriana. Do you remember?
It's terrible. I remember Syriana.
I kind of like Traffic.
I didn't like Traffic. Syriana's good.
He made that film. Okay. And then I think...
Oh, I'm thinking of 21 Grams when I say I didn't like it. I did like Traffic.
Yeah, Traffic is confused. Soderbergh and Del Toro.
Yeah, Traffic's great.
Yeah, he fucking made Syriana and then disappeared and then came back and made that terrible Matthew McConaughey movie Gold and is now making Doolittle.
Doolittle looks like a true disaster. Watch the trailer.
I kind of want to see it.
Yeah, me too.
It's the kind of disaster that I find interesting.
Also, De Niro's accent is... not De Niro. Downey Jr.'s accent is incomprehensible. It's like this weird kind of British amalgam.
I always liked Robert Downey Jr.
He's very charismatic.
I think he's least charismatic in Iron Man. He's a salesman in that movie.
He's a parody of his charisma. Yeah. He's most charismatic in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which is a masterpiece. What a great
film that is. And did you see The Nice Guys?
My God.
The Nice Guys is maybe the funniest film in terms of actually laughing minute by minute.
I think that might be true. Of the last 10 years.
The joke that I constantly think about that...
The Nixon
that you see Richard Nixon when you die.
Yeah.
Is transcendent. And also that film ends in one of my favourite endings when...
Well, spoiler alert for The Nice Guys, which is a film you should watch.
You definitely should see.
Just fast forward a minute.
When Ryan Gosling says to Russell Crowe, "You're drinking again," that's good. It's so good. It's thumbing your nose at this. He's like, yeah, whatever, fuck it. You know, some things have gotten better, some things have gotten worse.
Also, it's perfectly cast with Ryan Gosling and Russell Crowe.
When he gets his fucking shoulder snapped and he does that scream.
I should watch that again. You know, there's no real, love interest in that film, which I thought, because you feel like there are moments where there could be, and it's never really played out.
No.
And it leaves so much more room for jokes and conflict.
Yeah,
and those things are exquisite really and just great set pieces.
Also, really a series of extremely good villains.
Yeah.
Like,
in good context.
You really, each one gets enough of a time to shine.
Yeah.
It should have just been a James Bond movie. It shouldn't have. I'm glad it's an original property, but.
That's what they should do with James Bond if they wanted to make James Bond interesting.
Yeah. Make me remember the villains. That touches on political stuff in a funny way. The porn star's name is Misty Mountains, which is really funny.
That is good.
Thelma and Louise. We're meant to be talking about it. Well, he made The Predator.
Oh, that's right.
Which was bad.
That's a shame. I didn't see that.
And it lost a huge amount of money.
That sucks. Didn't he also make Iron Man 3?
He did, which has the best... Yeah, I don't like that film. Right. But it has a fantastic joke where... Iron Man has a gun pointed at a henchman.
Mm-hmm.
The henchman's fuck it, I don't even like these guys. That's right. Throws his gun and walks away.
That's very Shane Black.
Yeah, so Shane Black. I hope he's doing all right.
Me too. I think he was in a bad place.
Well, that's why he walked away from Hollywood altogether. Because, spoiler alert, when you get rich and successful in Hollywood, it's a bad, bad thing for you. Doesn't do so well for you personally.
I can imagine.
See the careers of pretty much anyone who's ever got famous in Hollywood. Do you think we could get Shane Black on this podcast? Why hasn't he made a film with Brad Pitt?
That would be perfect.
Why hasn't he made a subversive 60s spy Cold War thriller?
Yeah.
Where Pitt is doing a Russian accent.
And maybe Laura Dern.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I demand that film in my life right now.
Can you imagine?
Why not, though? Because Pitt is funny.
He's very funny.
But maybe it goes back...
He's funny in Thelma and Louise. Yeah. Not to be the boring guy who drags it back to the topic, but he is actually...
It's worth saying how funny he is Thelma and Louise.
I think if Thelma and Louise has... If you can... If you're looking to redeem this film, not that... I guess some people just straight up like it, and that is fine. But you can... generously read it as being humorous and kind of slapsticky in a particular way, and Brad Pitt's character plays into that really elegantly, and it is quite funny that he turns on them because he's like this parody of this kind of sweet farm boy that turns out to just be like a total
trickster.
Yeah.
Was it you or Brianna? Someone said, is this film meant to be a comedy?
I said that. Yeah,
it's a good question.
Well, I remember when you said that Cutting Class was a horror comedy, I was like, oh great, it knew.
Yeah.
But I think it just makes sense to read Thelma and Louise as a comedy, to be honest. There's a lot of... No. It's got some funny characters. Michael Madsen's kind of funny.
Madsen?
Maybe. I mean, it's... I don't know. Maybe that's
talk
just...
about it. I don't know what's going on with Michael Madsen.
Oh, I don't know. I prefer to not think about it.
I think he's a bad actor.
Sure.
I think he's bad in the Tarantino films, too.
Yeah.
I think he's not very good in this.
Well, he works in Tarantino because he's a cartoon.
He's really good in Kill Bill Volume 2 because he has a mournful... Have you seen Kill Bill Volume 2?
No.
Daniel Dixon.
I'm sorry.
Sometimes I think we should make a list, a big old list.
We should. It would reach around the earth.
Have you seen Volume 1?
I've seen half of Volume 1.
You could almost... I mean, I like Volume 1. Volume 2 might be Tarantino's best.
I have very, very mixed feelings about Tarantino.
I did. And, I mean, I just think, I get that he's reactionary and difficult and he just doesn't help it with the stupid things he says in interviews. I just think, I was thinking about this today because there's a viral tweet going around by a guy called Scott Wampler who pointed out something that I genuinely believe, that he was like, the sequence in Once Upon a Time in America...
Hollywood.
With all the neon lighting up while the Rolling Stones plays is the set piece of the year.
Sure.
And when Tarantino spends his life fucking cribbing from everyone and stealing.
He does.
But when he does something original like that, you're like, this guy is a talented, serious, meditative artist with original ideas in his head.
He's an auteur.
I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, each time I watch it, I like that film more. And
I've watched it once. It was actually, we were sitting waiting for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood to start, and you suggested that we start a podcast.
Yeah, of course, because it was your birthday.
It was my birthday, August 14th.
Yeah, and then Pitt appeared before us.
It took us a little longer to realise, I think, that he was the subject.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that we've chosen him. I do have now...
Even if it meant having to watch Thelma and Louise.
Well, I mean, even...
I did not dislike this film. I want to go on the record and say I did not hate this film. I was confused by this film. I think part of my struggle with this film is that I do not know what to make of it.
Sure.
I actually think that's my problem. It's not that I didn't like it. It's that it confused me.
It's a mess. But I think you could like it being a mess or you could hate it being a mess.
It's definitely a mess.
It's just tonally all over the place. I don't know what this has to... I just have to shoehorn this in because I said it to you and it's truly one of the craziest things that I can think. So, as I say, I was real big on Ridley Scott when I was like 11 years old. I rented the fucking The Duelists from Blockbuster, which is his first film, which is like a Napoleonic drama starring Harvey Keitel. Extremely boring. Like, I wouldn't watch that film now, but I watched it wide-eyed back then. And I loved Thelma... I loved Scott so much that I watched Thelma and Louise... this is real nerdy, but I used to back the IMDb. They still have those real long profiles where they have like director trademarks and personal history and trivia and stuff. I used to print out those of my favorite directors and put them in a plastic file of facts.
I believe that.
And so I'd have PTA was at the front because PTA was big for me from real young, but then Ridley Scott was the page over. And so I watched Thelma and Louise and then I watched Thelma and Louise again right after with the Ridley Scott commentary. And I can't remember anything he said except for one thing that has haunted me like a curse for 17 years, which is he said that he really, really, really wanted, and like the producers like shot his camera with a gun to stop him from the camera following Thelma and Louise's car down into the chasm and exploding into a fireball. He wanted the film to end with like... their mangled corpses like shooting out and hitting the camera.
Such a like, and it's funny because a lot of this film actually seems to stick on the subject half a beat too long, and that would have been the apotheosis. 100%.
Well, I mean, it's like when the truck blows up.
Yeah,
like,
you just keep seeing the truck. So this scene that is completely, again, I mean, obviously it's thematically congruent with the film, but kind of totally incongruous
of the film.
It is, but like this truck driver who has been making lewd gestures towards our girls up to this point is suddenly they as with Brad Pitt. They just keep running. They're on a long road trip. They just keep running into the same person. The third time they run into this truck driver, they're like, we know what to do. They drive off the road, like semi-seduce him. And as he walks over, they start lecturing him about his misogyny. And then try at gunpoint to get him to apologize. And when he refuses, shoot the tires of his truck. And when he further refuses, it's an oil tanker. And they shoot the tanker. And it goes up in such a fireball.
So many times. From so many angles.
In a way that would absolutely scorch the skin of them.
They're dead. Everyone's dead.
Fine.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I'm nitpicking the finer kind of points of logic of Thelma and Louise.
It's ultimately a good scene, I think.
Well, I just... Maybe... And again, this probably has a lot to do with the fact that it's the TV edit, but the dialogue between them and the truck driver is totally unhinged.
Yeah.
It's just very... It's just so clunky. It's also obvious.
Yeah. I think that's true.
I don't know. Look, this has definitely been... I feel like I want to say I'm very tired.
Sure. It's been a hard week for everyone.
It's been a hard week for everyone. And I feel like maybe I've started to say some stuff during this podcast that I haven't finished saying. I've probably been incoherent for part of it. I have no idea what this podcast will sound like.
Oh, okay. This episode. Sure.
Yeah, which is fine. I'm okay. No, I'm not like...
Yeah, we're always scattershot.
But this is particularly... I feel like... I'm really glad we had Brianna on.
Yeah.
I feel like she grounded it for us.
Well, because Brianna is... as I say, you know, like I... You know, I can't predict what Brianna will like.
Mm.
I did think she might like this film. Like she... I watched A Woman Under the Influence yesterday, the Cassavetes film, which is like... Perfect movie. And Brianna watched quite a lot of that, and I was like, Brianna will not like this movie, because talk about tension, like, A Woman Under the Influence is all tension, it's all, like, unpleasant, difficult things happening, whereas this film is like, but maybe it's something deeper, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll say some bad things about it, and I'll say some good things about it. Go on,
hit it, do a speed round.
I think it's, a lot of it is quite boring and doesn't move much. A lot of the performances are pretty unconvincing. A lot of the dialogue is extremely unbelievable and could be delivered much more effectively and sharply. It knows what its subject is, but kind of dances around it a lot. Like, there's kind of... And I can imagine in this situation there would be wild swings between kind of tension and letting off steam, but it doesn't... It never really melds those together. I compared it, actually, something that struck me, as particularly during the big police car chase at the end, it struck me that it kind of resembles the Blues Brothers in its chaoticness.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, I thought it like does resemble almost like a series of SNL sketches, which is obviously what the Blues Brothers is built off. It feels like this kind of disconnected series of vignettes where the characters aren't completely the same characters from scene to scene. It's kind of getting people from place to place, playing out an idea, moving to the next place. In terms of the good things...
Well, I think, I guess the only point I can add to is that there is this brand of American art which might be really good, but is so garish and not in the ways that I like that it immediately shuts me off. And big one of those is Saturday Night Live.
Sure, me too.
Which I just can't really comprehend how anyone finds...
There's some good sketches on it.
I've never seen one.
Like three.
It's American in a way...
It's mostly terrible.
...that I just don't know... Because I love American cinema. Me too. American slashers are my favourite, but there's something about that Saturday Night Live... glibness.
I actually feel similar about Key and Peele, and they are clearly both comedy geniuses because sometimes they do the best stuff imaginable, but there's a lot of sketches they have where I just feel like you're just overplaying your hand. And SNL is SNL is ever much worse. Like SNL is like they have to
I feel that about RuPaul, which is I've tried to watch because so many people I really like watch that, so it's not an insult, it's just there's this vernacular that I don't get, and Thelma and Louise quite often talks in that vernacular.
Well, I can't believe I'm bringing up this movie, possibly for the third time on the podcast, but it's a mad, 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 mad world.
Let's fucking do it.
Does that well. Like, it does those, and I don't know if it's just because I watched it when I was a child, but I feel like it has that particular kind of wild, slightly, you know, off-kilter aesthetic that is founded on like very kind of basic jokes and just really committing to a bit, but does it exquisitely. And part of it's the performances, part of it's the way in which it ties together. But I feel like Thelma and Louise doesn't quite click for me.
I genuinely believe that we're building a canon of films that we should, to spice up the Brad Pitt podcast main feed, we should just have a bonus episode on Jason Takes Manhattan, Friday the 13th Part 8.
Mad World.
And It's a Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Definitely. Yeah, put them on the list. Well, maybe every 10 episodes
I would love to rewatch It's a Mad, Mad,
Oh,
Mad World.
I would. Oh, Yeah,
no, there's also
put in the diary. Absolutely,
Criterion. The Criterion collection have it, and yeah. The Criterion sale is coming up. It starts in November.
I want to buy a copy of that for my father actually, because he introduced me to that film.
That's fucking good.
Get it to him for Christmas.
You good things about Thelma and Louise.
Go yeah, on. Thank you. Its politics are. Oh, I mean, its politics are good, obviously.
Yeah, and that's, agreeable.
Yeah, its politics are agreeable.
Fucking hell.
Okay.
They are, though.
They are good. It has a series of wonderful actors and actresses.
Go on. Really. You sound like a robot responding to, like, the concept of cinema.
Brad Pitt's in it.
Yeah. He's real good.
It's got a guy who looks like Adam Driver.
Who I thought maybe could be Adam Driver.
I mean, I said, hey, there's Adam Driver, and Joe, seemingly quite... almost convinced, said, is that actually Adam Driver?
I don't see how it's not Adam Driver.
Maybe it's his dad.
What's Adam Driver's dad's name?
I don't know. Greg.
Ryan Driver.
Ryan Driver.
The ending is good.
The ending is... Oh, this is the thing. Since we know the ending's coming, you mentioned this while watching it. If we didn't know the ending was coming, how would that change the film?
Maybe...
I actually think there are a series of... really interesting exchanges between...
I'm yawning, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I've been yawning.
It's been a tough week for everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe that should be our catchphrase.
There's a series of kind of... Susan Sarandon and Michael Madsen are a couple. And I genuinely think there's some interesting tension between them. He comes across the country.
I don't get that.
Yeah, I think there are some kind of...
I think he's useless.
I quite like their romance. I'm kind of compelled by it. I don't think he acts it that well. But I think there's interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah,
it's kind of the way in which they seem to be in a liminal space. She's clearly not just him that she's concerned with. It's kind of the world that she's been presented with that is causing her to struggle. But she doesn't kind of write him off completely. She is kind of thoughtful about the dilemma. Turns out she doesn't have to deal with it anyway because she drives a car off a cliff. But I think that's kind of it.
That's true. I hadn't even really thought about
Louise
that.
Louise is in an interesting space.
Yeah.
I think emotionally in that relationship. I don't know. It's sometimes funny.
It's generous. It's not...
Why do people like it?
I guess this is my question.
A lot of smart people like it.
Do they really like it, though? Do they really like it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's not a film I hear a lot about, is I guess what I'm saying.
I mean, you see the last shot, right? Which is a good shot.
Sure. But, I mean, you see the gif of Orson Welles clapping on Twitter all the time.
That's
I don't
true.
Think all those people have seen it.
There's that
game.
Robert Redford smiling. Shot.
I didn't know that was Redford. I genuinely didn't know. That really fucking blew
yeah,
my mind.
Yeah, me too.
I thought that was like a Chuck Norris light. And I know from sure. Robert Redford.
Yeah.
And I did not fucking know that was Robert Redford.
It's a surprise.
We're going to be talking about Redford a lot, you know. He enters the picture extremely soon.
Because
he becomes Pitt's mentor in
really?
Like a big way. Yeah.
Okay.
Redford casts him in about two films' time in A River Runs Through It.
Interesting.
Directs him one more time, stars with him in Spy Game. Redford obviously saw this kid and was like, he's my boy. Which is weird because Robert Redford is a weird actor. I like Redford, but he's weird. And he keeps trying to pretend that he's like... prestige-y American, but
yeah.
He's a total weirdo. Did you see All Is Lost, that sailing film?
Oh, no. I hate films on oceans.
Really?
Yeah, I feel like, where can you go? You're just on the ocean. Legit.
What about space films? Do you have the same concern?
No.
Where can you go in space, Dan? That's, well...
occasionally.
There might be underwater apes.
I don't know. I went to Japan earlier this year, and on the flight back... I may have even talked about this before on the podcast. I have no idea. I saw the entirety of The Meg, but I didn't watch it. I just saw it on other people's screens.
I wish The Meg was a better film than it is.
It looked terrible. I knew exactly what was going on. I can tell you, it could have been a silent film.
I love shark movies. I really wanted The Meg to be good.
You know, I've never seen Jaws.
Jaws is not so good.
Okay. I mean, you don't like Spielberg, do you?
You sound like a dickhead when you say I don't like Steven Spielberg, because in some ways he seems undeniable, but on the whole, I don't like Spielberg.
Yeah.
I put him in the same category as Scott, actually, that
okay.
I think. That, like, Spielberg
made a lot of films.
And some, like, AI is like, fucking hell, that's such a great film. But most of them are not great. Indiana Jones, like...
Sure. I saw that too late.
Regressive. Sexist. That's true. Weird. Not fun.
No. Surprisingly unfun, given the capacity that it has for fun in its scenario.
Let's... Because we're still early. Let's reorder our rankings of Brad Pitt films. I'm sorry. I just like to do it.
Okay.
What's your number one? Say Cutting Class for me, Dan.
Yeah, it's Cutting Class. Oh!
Dan.
It's what are you going to say? It's Cutting Class or Ad Astra, right?
Oh, Ad... Dan.
How many have we watched? Five? Yeah, okay. It's definitely Cutting Class or Ad Astra. If I'm recommending someone see a film...
Would you say go and see Cutting Class or you say see Ad Astra?
There are people
who say go to Cutting Class everywhere.
I think some people would find Cutting Class unpalatable.
Would your dad see Cutting Class?
Yeah.
He would?
Yeah.
Would he like it?
He'd like parts of it.
Really?
I think so.
What would be his least... the listener has no connection to Dan's dad, but Dan, I just think Dan's dad is like very learned and very smart, but I guess his taste is idiosyncratic.
His taste is idiosyncratic.
So what's the film that he hates of this?
Okay, there's a few possibilities.
Go on.
He's a scientist. He might hate Ad Astra because it commits to a scientific picture that he doesn't agree with.
Sure. Basically our criticism.
Yeah, or he hates Across the Tracks because it's boring. There's nothing in it.
Who liked? We talked about the people who liked Across the
Tracks. That's true, they were on Letterboxd. He finds things to like in Cutting Class. My dad's inscrutable, but in some ways. But he likes the Americana of Thelma and Louise. I think he really likes Americana, and it's probably where I get my love of Americana.
Sure.
And I think that he probably have problems with it, but I think he'd find it interesting.
Sure.
He might have even seen it. I'll have to check with him.
My mum would love Thelma and Louise.
I mean, I think my mum loves Thelma and Louise.
Yeah. Maybe we're just at the wrong position in time. It
genuinely, like,
it doesn't feel throwbacky and retro enough yet.
And a lot of them we're going to be watching at the wrong time. A lot of them aren't going to be for us.
Sometimes I wonder. There will be some, like, I wonder, what does Ocean's 11 look like?
My dad, I saw that at the cinema with my family and others. I don't know. And I remember Dad really liked Ocean's 11.
You know, my dad made me go to an Ocean's film. I think it was Ocean's 12. Instead of seeing what in an extremely telling thing I really wanted to see at the cinema, which was the first Saw movie. And it
What a moment for Joe. A real sliding doors.
It's fucked me up that I had to see the Ocean's movies. I think I would be, like, my life would be joy and happiness if I got to see Saw when it first came out of the cinema.
Mm.
Dan hasn't seen Saw.
No.
I'm going to make you see Saw.
Okay.
You should watch the first Saw.
All right.
It's Halloween this Thursday. I'm going to make Dan watch.
We're going to think about it. We'll see what...
What? What were you going to... You should watch Antichrist on Thursday, Dan.
Okay, wait, we'll talk about this
all No, time. That way you can get you to commit.
I'm so tired.
Antichrist, then Jason... Takes Manhattan.
I'll absolutely watch Jason Takes Manhattan.
Like a child demanding that we go to McDonald's in front of some like friends of the family that you can't beat me in front of.
I'll absolutely watch Jason Takes Manhattan.
Not Antichrist.
I'll think about
it. It's Antichrist. Been a tough week for everybody. It might be a tough film to watch right now.
I think.
Would you give Thelma and Louise out of 5 stars?
2.
Okay. I just rated it on Letterboxd and I gave it 1.5.
Yeah. I feel... No, look, and this is the thing. I might sound like I feel bad because I felt like I should have liked it for political reasons or whatever. That is not the case. I think I feel bad because I do not actually think I have the tools to evaluate it and I am being placed in a situation in which I have to evaluate it. I think I actually don't know what to think of it.
Sure.
I think I'm confused by it. I think... Sure. But my gut is absolutely that was not a good movie.
Sure.
But I could imagine being persuaded otherwise. And also, I would love, not imminently, maybe in 4 or 5 years, watch the non-television cut.
That would be... I kind of like that we watched the
book. Me too. I think it was the right decision.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Cool. Thanks, everybody. Well, we're not going to... We said, which was a tease that we didn't fulfill on, we said that this week we'd watch Watchmen, but it's so fucking late. It's
too late. We'll watch...
Let's just quickly sidebar what you bet you thought about the first episode of Watchmen. We promised we would last week.
I thought it looked like nothing else on television and that made me excited.
Sure.
I was concerned that it might be trying to write checks that it can't cash.
Sure. But in terms of the things that it's saying.
Yeah, like it's being interested in a lot of themes. Sure. And I'm like, how's it going to carry all this off?
Sure, sure.
I think there's a lot of, it shows great promise.
Sure.
But that is also what I write on student essays when,
yeah.
You know, it's like, you could get there, but you didn't quite.
Yeah, sure. It double endorsed. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I expected to hate it outright. I didn't hate it outright. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, I think it could be. I would be surprised if I don't watch all 10 episodes. It would, at this point, it would have to do some. So it would have to take a real swerve because it's being interesting enough.
I would be really upset if I was just cautiously optimistic for the whole 10 episodes.
Yeah, that would suck. But that's,
you know,
also
how that happens so much these days.
HBO season 1.
Yeah. You just spend the whole thing setting up things and being like, oh, this will, when this clicks.
Yeah, I'm.
That's why TV is not so good.
I'm watching a Netflix show that I'm not even going to name because it's embarrassing. Why? During my lunch breaks at the moment.
Are you watching the Paul Rudd twin show?
No, someone told me I would like that. Actually, shout out to Eleanor Gordon-Smith who told me I would like that.
Yeah, hey, Eleanor.
Last week, let's do this at the end. For those who've made it to the end, last week we talked about Eleanor's book.
When we didn't name it.
And we didn't name the book. The book is called Stop Being Reasonable.
I saw the panic on your face. You almost couldn't name it. It is called Stop Being Reasonable, Dan. I'm a good friend to Eleanor. I remember the name of her book.
I also remember. I absolutely remember.
It's a real good book. I really enjoyed it. I hadn't even told Eleanor. I didn't even tell Eleanor to her personally that how much I liked that book, but I really liked it. It's real good.
Yeah, buy the book, rate it on Goodreads, 5 stars, and email us at thebradpittcast@gmail.com.
I'd love an email.
Rate us on iTunes, subscribe on iTunes if you're listening at some other venue, follow us on Spotify.
We've got art. We have art.
Genevieve Reynolds, a really excellent artist and dear friend. Of ours, Genevieve Reynolds. She's a Sydney-based artist who makes extraordinary paintings. You can look her up. You can follow her on Instagram. I'm not actually sure of her Instagram name, but I'm sure if you search Genevieve Reynolds, she'll come up. But I really love our new art.
I love
our
new art.
This is slight teaser. We may be getting, finally, theme music soon.
Yeah.
So keep your ears peeled.
So that episode doesn't open with us being like,
hello.
Bad podcast.
Yeah, we'll smooth out our voices with guitar or something. Thank you so much for listening.
What's next week?
I have no idea.
I have fucking no idea.
We'll find. It's not A River Runs Through It. It's before A River Runs Through It. I think it's, I don't know.
I don't know if I can check it quickly, but it's a real anti-climax if I don't, it's not easily findable on my phone. What the fuck is the next film?
I'm sorry.
I have to get it. Just this say is, something, I mean, Dan, quickly.
This
fill the
such a chaotic episode. I feel this is inappropriate.
Fill the 14 seconds.
Denouement.
Oh, Johnny Suede.
I don't know what that is.
Weird film. Really weird film. Directed by Tom DiCillo.
None of these words mean anything to me.
Okay, DiCillo is really weird. He's like discount Jim Jarmusch.
Oh.
And Johnny Suede is discount Jim Jarmusch.
Crazy.
It's going to be extremely weird.
We'll check back in.
Nick Cave is in it as an albino.
Okay.
And Catherine Keener is in it.
I love Catherine Keener.
That's going to be fucking weird. Yeah, Catherine Keener's
the
best.
Great. Well, thank you for bearing with us. If you have any thoughts
about... Listen, it's been a tough week for everybody.
It's been a tough week for everybody, but Eve, tell us how it's been a tough week for you at thebradpittcast@gmail.com. Also, if you want to, you know...
Why isn't this ending?
If you want to tell us what you thought about Thelma and Louise, write to us. We'd love to hear. We might read it on the podcast next week. Thank you so much. Until next time.
Until next time.